The Unicycle Man by Reddit user RV Coney. In our hillside town, where flowers grew waist high in vast fields of color, lives were infected by an almost comical sense of bliss. For as long as a cordial beaming sun was in the sky, every breath was like enlightenment. There was, however, a consequence to our naivete. Come nighttime, a man on a unicycle patrolled the streets, in tattered overalls and polka-dot socks. He played the harmonica, and he played it eerily well. His constant melody was Mary Had a Little Lamb, but on some days he changed it depending on the activities in town. On our town's anniversary, he played our hymn. On festivals, he played whatever song was popular, regardless of the genre. We were advised to never make eye contact with him, for reasons unknown. But he had a way of tempting us to come to our windows and look right at him. He was the reason some bedrooms had boarded windows. Once he passed by our house and played the song that was playing when I kissed my girlfriend in my bedroom that afternoon. Dream a Little Dream of Me, Ella Fitzgerald. In that moment, I could imagine his face, pale perhaps and gaunt, with a smarmy grin and a suggestive wink, as if to say he knew what we kids were up to. Oh, I bet the creep did know. I was skimming through the last 20 pages of Little Woman, a charming little novel by Louisa May Alcott, urging myself to finish the book tonight so I could wake up feeling accomplished. As the words became muddled, the sound of that distant harmonica began. Mary Had a Little Lamb. Nothing special on his repertoire. I panicked when I realized that my curtains were still open. I stood up, squinting to limit my field of vision, and reached out for the curtains. I looked outside the window to expect him gone, yet there he stayed. And there we were, eyes locked in an inescapable glance. There was neither horror nor comfort in the plain set of features that I saw. He had the most average eyes, nose, and lips on this side of town, and they were contorted in an expression of hollow grief. I gasped and pulled my curtains closed. Trembling, I turned to lock the door and covered myself in my sheets. The unmistakable sound of a harmonica was growing louder outside my bedroom door, and it was now filled with something I hadn't noticed before. Sorrow, suffering, loneliness. I then began to weep. I wept until my lungs bled, until my eyes burned, until I could no longer comprehend what happiness felt like. It was painful. Through my tears, I opened my eyes and saw the unicycle man standing over my bedside. He was looking at me, balancing on his unicycle, and began to play It's a Small World on his harmonica, as if to mock my agony. Misery loved company after all. The Penny by Reddit user DevilLived44.
It's 1920, sir. Always 1920.
The old woman smiles at him. He thought the date was somewhere between 1910 and 1915. But upon having a closer look at the penny, he's positive it's the one he's been searching for. The man only knows its backstory. A cursed penny that killed its owners after World War I, and nothing more. Everyone whose skin touched it has all died a painful death, but he's not afraid. All he ever wanted is to admire its beauty among the other antiques in his collection. When the authorities retrieve his lifeless body from the burned sedan, they find a penny under his tongue. No one knows why it's there, so they decide to keep it for further investigation. But by the next morning, it's mysteriously vanished. His death ends up being just an accident. Everything is soon forgotten, and the penny's disappearance becomes an urban legend, told by senior officers at the police station.
Why wearing gloves? Today's not that cold.
The old woman doesn't reply. She only smiles as she brings out a tiny wooden box, gently opens it, then hands it to her customer for inspection.
Isn't the date 19...
1921, sir. It's always been 1921.
The Antiquated Horror by Reddit user Weird Bryce Guy. He was enraptured by the carnage playing out before him. To see the people run helplessly to the exits but denied passage. To hear their panicked animal screams as they saw the things hounding them. To smell them shit themselves in their fright. The Mephistophelian creations of black design lumbered sluggishly about the auditorium, having no need to rush their prey. He had locked and inconspicuously barricaded all the doors, ensuring that no one could escape the violence. They had called him mediocre, unevocative, puerile. He belonged to an ancient breed of filmmakers, and his films represented a nearly forgotten era of horror, one where showing the creature wasn't frowned upon, where action could follow action, whilst characterization was built alongside the slaughter. He did not make slow burn, atmospheric, bone-chilling horror. He did not write stories of mundane tragedy, depression, and mental illness. He wrote of beasts and creatures, of forces and things, from places unknown and unimaginable. Born of scientific experimentation, or demoniacal copulation, and they hated him for it. His films were callously, relentlessly derided. They pushed him over an edge, drove him to a decision from which neither they nor he could return. He would make one final film, describe it in all the ways he knew would draw them in. Eerie, existential, a character study steeped in terror. He would not even hint at the presence of loathsome abominations, of gore and slime and bile. He would hold a private screening for his most critical of critics and unleash upon them the black, unsurpassable malignity of Milton's Pandemonium. Due to the very nature of his work, he had knowledge of and, more importantly, access to certain circles of the industry, which could provide him with the kind of life forms he desired. Using dubiously acquired funds, he had certain creatures built and bred and transported to the hall where he would showcase his final film. Unbeknownst to the attendees, they would be actors in the film. The camera is set to roll once everyone was seated. Once underway, he briefly introduced himself and left the stage, not wanting to delay the violence longer than necessary. The lights dimmed, the auditorium quieted, and the first roar of hungry beasts filled the air. Heads turned, chatter was made, and some even rose from their seats, their lizard brains sensing the predators lurking amidst the shadow behind the curtain. He stood on the balcony overhead, watching the dim unrest, the mounting fear, and eventual terror as his creations, his only children born of his imagination, fell upon the proud and ignorant masses below him. The bloodshed was supreme, the slaughter without precedent. When it ended, when not a soul was left to raise a finger to his brilliance, he did what he had from the start planned to do. He mounted the railing of the balcony, took a bow, and plunged down to the floor, where his beasts waited to receive the final course of their meal.
Hey, it's Mr. Freaky, and I hope you enjoyed this week's bonus video. If you did, go ahead and like the video and leave a comment as to which story was your favorite. Also, keep a lookout for Wednesday's video. Have a horrific evening, and remember to stay spooky, my friends.